Hi, Ingrid. Nice to see you again.
You too.
So I couldn't really prepare for it.
Jim and Brian, I owe you an apology, Craig. I hit the wrong button. I didn't mean to just pull the parachute.
Oh, I'm going to take that to my grave. Me and Craig, we were crying. I
had to for him. Really feeling insulted.
That's what they all say. Marianne, let's see. Okay, is Marianne here? I'm not seeing Marianne.
Probably one of the Larry Stibles.
I see two Larrys, yeah.
Yeah, two yeah. Larry Stibles, okay.
Ah, okay. That's the welcome, Larry Stibles. I'd like to introduce Larry Stibles, the moderator.
this came from last month when he put his name on my picture, and we've not been able to take it off yet, even though I'm using my own computer. It's very strange. But anyway, thank you all for being here today and participating in the case. We must all be back now. And so I would like to introduce our case writer and discussion leader, Larry Stibles. But what we will do is we will begin in a few minutes taping the session. And so if there's things that you think are confidential that you don't want to be recorded for other people to hear, you know, don't bring that up at this particular portion of the discussion. And we will have the groups to report in. And then at the end, our case writer and moderator will tell us if this is a real case, what really happened. We'll get to know if it's a real case or sometimes it's a compilation of different real situations. So I guess, do you get to turn on the recording, Larry?
And I've already turned on the recording.
Okay. Yep. All right. So I would like to introduce Lawrence J. Stibles, who is co-founder of Stibles Peabody and Associates and Board Options. I had written my own intro, but Larry thought it was not appropriate for recording, so I will.
Absolutely, I will not read
only, but the one that has more decorum. His perspectives on leadership have appeared in the Harvard Business Review, California Management Review, MIT Sloan Management Review, and Directorship. He received his master's degree in clinical psychology from the University of Texas and his doctorate in organizational development from Harvard University. He's given keynote addresses at national conferences such as the Society of Information Management, the Financial Executives International, and the National Basketball Retired Players Association. He's listed in Who's Who's in Business and Who's Who's in America. And he has received the Albert Marquis Distinguished Service Award for his enduring contributions to the field of leadership. He is the co-founder and vice president of Board Options, and its mission is to act as a resource to nominating and governing committees on board talent and board CEO communications and board self-evaluation. His board work includes having been on a venture-backed company in the human resources space, and he served on boards of the New England chapter of the National Association of Corporate Directors, the Boston Human Resources Association, and the Institute for Career Certification International. So I'm going to turn the podium over to Larry, and then you can call on the different groups to report in.
Okay, so why don't we just go... just to go around and first go with John Barnick's group, who's the spokesperson for your group, John? Can you unmute yourself, please?
Yeah, I'm going to do the summary from our team developed.
Okay.
So I'll push on. So, anyways, go ahead.
Please.
Yeah. So it's a well-written case study, but all of us identified some key data points we'd like to have to make a better decision. But we basically came forward with, rather than picking one decision, we kind of came up with a path to a solution. So the first they got three parties involved: the CEO, founder, the owner, Bain private equity company, and a board member. And so the first step was to try to go down the route of marriage counseling and to come a meeting with the CEO and the owner. I forget her name, Shirley or whatever her name was, but and basically say, there's a sort of a feeling of disrespect and misunderstanding between these two. Can you be marriage counselor and get them to move off of dead center to come up with a path they both agree on? Maybe a little bit more aggressive timing, a little bit more appreciation of development and approval of technology. If that solution works, that's probably the cheapest and most effective. But if egos stay strong, then the second step would be to meet privately with the CEO and say, listen, this isn't going to work. You guys are going to butting heads. Would you consider a chief technology position where you can drive the technology behind the products and bring in another CEO that can drive the sales and growth of the business and potential acquisitions and bolt-ons? That's probably going to take additional financial incentive for this CEO to do this. If he's not agreeable to anything that looks like a chief technology position, then you basically keep the company going and you work with the owner to get an executive recruiter to find a CEO that has enough experience to come in and basically replace the CEO that has got medical experience that can grow the business. And the key risk point is you may lose the largest customer again. So that needs to be a focus when you're bringing in a new CEO. So that was our summary. If any of the team members want to comment, if I missed anything, that's our sort of path to solution we came up with.
Okay. Babs, how about your team? Can you unmute yourself?
So I'm there. So I had Richard Samuelson, Maria Jones, and John Morgan in my team. And the first thing I want to note is we did not like that she was being called the B word, right? Because there's something wrong with the culture where everybody's calling somebody that, and that's not a good thing. We thought that it was kind of obvious. We discussed that Jeffrey has too many roles. He might need a hobby too. And a lot of the discussion was around whether you separate out the CEO and chair role, but how do you, Maria actually said, how do we right fit him and find out which role is actually best for him and convince Jeffrey to move into that role or transition into that role? We talked a lot about whether there was a board assessment had been done and how we could actually get the board to implement this. And one of the questions we asked a lot about is, we're not hearing a lot about the rest of the board. We're not hearing about the composition. John was asking, well, how many board members are there? Were there four, are there seven? Why aren't we hearing about them? Richard said he's been on boards like this in the past, where you have sometimes in technology companies, for example, you have people that are functional experts rising into the top and taking a lot of different roles and kind of having a fiefdom of some sort. We also discussed, whether or not, they had Heidrick and Struggles in there. Maybe it's Heidrick and Struggles. They asked not just to help them with a board assessment, but to do an organizational study to look at all the roles and how people are working together. This was a great comment that came from Richard. He said, well, it really looks like the reader, the person who's in the point of view position, and Sherry are not independent because they were friends and she doesn't want to offend Sherry by, or he doesn't want to offend Sherry by saying or doing anything to try to alleviate the problems there. We also thought that the chances of it being IPO'd or sold with the kind of cultural dynamics, would be a problem. And what did I miss, team? What did I forget?
Great job.
Okay. John, yeah. How about your team? John Ela.
Going to be Bouvier.
I'm the spokesperson, Larry.
Okay.
So our group, which had George, Marianne, and John E. in it, and myself, came up with some similar outcomes as the previous two groups. So we had talked about that there really needed to be a conversation about what are the goals and objectives of all parties involved, both Sherry and Jeffrey, right? To get alignment between the two sides, as well as perhaps not knowing how many other board members there are, definitely some involvement in this situation, this discussion with other board members banding together. To have this goals and objectives conversation probably is going to take an outside person, some outside expertise to facilitate a discussion and broker a solution that hopefully would work for everyone. The person in the point of view role, the CFO, has the opportunity to really step up and stand up to Sherry to a large degree to get her to see that firing Jeffrey is really the nuclear option that nobody wants at the end of the day. Part of that being because Jeffrey has proven himself to, I guess in a crunch, be able to salvage and sustain a key client relationship that's 45% of the business. He could be retained, perhaps not in the capacity of both chairman and CEO, or to the degree possible to retain him. If, however, again, not knowing the makeup of the board, how many seats are occupied by B&B Capital in the case, if the nuclear option is the option that's chosen at the end of the day, there's an opportunity for the person in the CFO role to say, if Jeffrey goes, that person could step in as the chair of the board with the idea, to Marianne's point, that another person could fill the CEO role for the organization. But again, stepping in as the chair, finding a new CEO, we felt was the nuclear option that shouldn't be engaged at this particular juncture. And George, John, Marianne, if there's anything you want to add that I didn't cover, please feel free to do so.
Okay, go ahead, George.
Marianne?
Oh, just that we thought that the collective person that we were on the board might offer to do that role and to step in and to be the chair. We didn't know if the other board members were investors, family members, because we didn't know a lot about them. Yeah.
We have one group left. Who is the spokesperson for that group?
That'll be me. It's Jim. And I was in a group with Brian, Robert, Ingrid, and one of the two Craigs. I think we're going to pick up many of the same themes. I think we stayed at it maybe just a slightly different level in terms of action. We thought it was a very good case and that there was a lot going on. And so some of the things that we highlighted in terms of issues, one was about the role of the board and board members and governance. Where here we have sort of two individuals who are sort of each as a lone wolf trying to set direction for the company, and where's the board in that discussion? It's about stages of growth and management. The company may have outgrown the previous management, may need some different things for stage of growth. It's certainly about miscommunication and unaligned expectations. There were a couple of versions of the case out there, but no matter what, to be this far along in this relationship and to not really be aligned on timelines and expectations is a miss. It's about managing risk, because there's two views of what the future may hold, and there's risk to picking one side or the other. And then certainly it's about, human dynamics and human politics. So I think we felt like the first thing was to really have the board meet, reestablish the role of the board, and get us level set. A goal in doing that is, one, to get cooler heads to prevail, and to get more information so we can really understand, you know, is the VP of, you know, is the CEO qualified? Is the VP of sales qualified? You know, what are the sales cycles, to really sort that through, to get common ground on goals and incentives, and then common agreement on how we're going to get there. Now, we think, you know, the probable path is probably a transition for the CEO to maybe a CTO role, but it's not, you know, in terms of like firing the VP of sales, it's not our role as a board to manage at that level. It's to establish good management and governance over management and to hold them accountable. We do have to understand that it's a PE firm, it's their dollars, it's their money on the table. And so they certainly have a powerful role. But we think in the meantime, because there's risk, perhaps taking abrupt action that could actually run counter to the PE firm's goals, we think we've got some leverage to have individual conversations and bring everybody to the table.
Thank you. I think we've, has any group not been covered? Okay, let me comment on this. I thought your suggestions as groups and collectively were excellent. I wish in this case that they had followed your suggestions. Didn't happen. So I want to talk about what actually happened in the case, why this issue is important beyond the particular case. I want to talk about the issue of gray directors in private equity companies and family businesses, and then the actor-observer effect and how to deal with the actor-observer effect at the board level. So in terms of what actually happened, the independent director decided not to get involved and just said nothing. The CEO was confronted by the private equity partner, and they just butted heads. Eventually, the private equity partner introduced a resolution into the full board to fire the CEO, which was done. They hired a recruiting firm to replace the CEO. Upon the new CEO's arrival, the new CEO, as instructed by the private equity partner, then fired the vice president of sales, and a search was done for the VP of sales. So that was done at the company level. The CEO who was fired, you won't be surprised, left, became executive residence at a venture capital firm, cooled his heels for 2 years, did some deals, did some work at MIT, and basically at the conclusion of the non-compete, went into business competing against the former company and beat the pants out of them. That's what happened. Let me address the issues in a little broader way. The case really deals with that. The protagonist is the independent director. And the word for that independent director is a gray director. In family businesses, you often see that the CEO/founder brings his fraternity brother as an independent director, or the partner in charge of the CPA firm that does the audits as the independent director. So from a legal point of view, maybe you could say they're an independent director. From a practical point of view, they're not. I worked with Jim Feinstein and John Ela on the board of Mahoney Gardens. I was really, really impressed that Mahoney Gardens really had truly independent directors. In family businesses, that's actually not that often. It's often gray directors. Now, in my experience with the venture capital world and the private equity world, it's the same thing. The so-called independent directors are not really independent. They know that they got their opportunity because they were trusted by the partners at the VC firm, and they want to retain that trust by the partners because they want to be on other boards. They don't want to ruin the relationship with the private equity. So they're really not truly independent. They're gray. And I have seen battles where usually the CEO loses, where the CEO really wants to get truly independent people, not dependent on the private equity firm or the venture capital firm. And it, I haven't seen that. The second thing in this case dealt with what I call the problem-solve problem. The problem-solve problem in the case was there was a crisis. The CEO steps into the crisis, goes to the, their best customer, stops their best customer from leaving, then reports back to the success to the board. And instead of getting a lot of attaboys, the board's response is to say, you didn't tell us about this crisis when it happened. You're only telling us about it after it's over. What else are you not telling us? And that is a, I see that over and over again. The private equity, the venture capital people then make attributions that this person is hiding information from us and we can't trust this person. Now, how common is this as a problem? Gong and Wu looked at data from 126 private equity transactions in the United States between 1990 and 2006. They documented a CEO turnover rate of 51% within 2 years of the public announcement of a transaction. 51% after 51% within 2 years of CEOs that are brought in are out. According to the authors, these removals are usually related to the CEOs having lost the confidence of the private equity dominated board of directors. It is not related to the companies having outgrown the CEO and he needs to become vice president of technology, then we'll bring in a real CEO to facilitate. No, it has to do with the lack of trust, the erosion of trust. Which brings me to the actor-observer effect, and I'll explain what the actor-observer effect is with a really stupid story. Marianne is both my business partner and my wife. We live in a lovely town in Wayland. We live on a lovely body of water, 2 miles by 6 miles. Down the street from our home is a place called the Chateau. It used to be a speakeasy, and now it's a local bar. Then there's a parking lot that is supposedly it's a public parking lot owned by the town. Every day that I would drive to work, that parking lot would be littered with beer bottles, wine bottles, all sorts of trash. I was furious. Now, I make attributions about the people who go to the Chateau, their low life, their low caste, their white trash, they're just bad people. That was my attribution. And then I think, oh, well, maybe the actor-observer effect, I'm a victim of the actor-observer effect. Let me test it out. So I go to the local hardware store and I spend $20 to get a trash can. I put the trash can in the parking lot. Bam! There's no more trash on the ground. The reason why there was trash on the ground was that there was no trash can to put the trash. Once we put a trash can on the ground, everybody started putting their trash in the trash can. Problem solved. That's the actor-observer effect, which goes something like this. When Maria does something, she attributes what she's doing to environmental circumstances. There's no trash bag. My boss really wants me to do it. There's no time to do anything else. I have to do it this way. When I observe Maria do that behavior, I don't consider that. I think Maria is this kind of person. This is her personality. I see this happening over and over again between boards and CEOs. And that's the problem with the problem-solved problem effect. The CEO sees there is an issue, solves the issue, reports the issue is solved to the board. The board then makes attributions that this person is withholding information from us. And then you start going like this. I'll give you another example of a situation I was involved in. This was a very bright MIT graduate who became a CEO founder of a company, but he'd never managed a board before. He'd managed a founder-dominated board when he started the company. That would be, you know, his wife and his friends and angel investors. Well, that was one thing. All of a sudden, you've got, now it's a venture-backed dominated board of directors. Different kettle of fish, totally different. So he has to make a presentation to the board about how are they doing in terms of acquiring space and hiring people. He is an engineer. He has spent all his education at MIT on how to be detail oriented and show that he's being methodical. And so he has a 20-minute PowerPoint presentation about all the things he's doing. And that's what he's learned to do. And I am suggesting this is a different audience. This is a board audience. They have like 10 minutes of patience. They just give them the big highlights and use the word impatience. You're impatient for us to grow. I'm impatient for us to grow. Here's what we're doing. Boom. He looked at me and he said, I have a 20-minute presentation. You've turned it into 20 seconds. That doesn't make any sense. I said, trust me, this is what this board wants. And he did it, and the board was very pleased. They didn't want 20 minutes of PowerPoint presentation. The point is, a lot of founders of companies have never reported to boards of directors before, and they don't understand the dynamics. And people who are partners of venture capital firms, partners in private equity firms, are the world's worst teacher. The analogy I would make is when Princess Diana married Charles, she had a meeting with Queen Elizabeth. And Queen Elizabeth said, your life is now going to change because you are a royal. I want to help you. Now, the queen's motivation was very nice, but there's certain problems with what she said. Number one is, if Diana has a problem, it's going to be with the queen or the queen's son. How can the queen be a coach to Diana on how to manage the queen? Second is, the queen is the queen. She's very busy. Does she really have the time to be Diana's coach? No. Third, Diana is Diana. She's young. She's beautiful. She's really on top of things. She feels she doesn't need a coach. And I see the same dynamics go on between CEO, founders, and partners in private equity firms. They say, well, we'll coach you. They don't. And the CEO doesn't want to listen. And so the issue is get an outsider to coach the CEO founder on how to manage the dynamics of a private equity board, because it's different than a founder-dominated board. And that's different from a public company board. Each board has its own dynamics. So let me shut up at this point. Any questions, comments? Does this relate? Can any of you relate to any of this in terms of your own experience, either on boards or as employees?
I can tell you one quick example. I was CEO of a company that was pseudo public, but it had went through bankruptcy, and the debt holders became equity owners, and they're primarily sort of hedge fund type private equity companies. And if any of them own more than 10% share of the company, they could have two observers at the board. So I was CEO, had a chairman, four board members, and eight advisors on the board. So that was a new.
That must have been fun.
That were supposed to be quiet, but they obviously weren't quiet. So the dynamics for me was pseudo public company, but when you have advisors on the board, it was a dynamic I'd never experienced before. It was a circus of egos. So, yeah. So it's, you know. Anyways,
yeah, you know, boards, different boards have different dynamics, and there's certain dynamics in family-dominated boards of directors that are different than public company boards, and they're different than founder-dominated boards. So each board is unique and different. Is there any other comments, questions, issues? So we will not be meeting in December. It's our tradition not to compete with Christmas, but we will be meeting in January, and we look forward to seeing you then. Meantime, have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Have a wonderful Christmas and Kwanzaa, or whatever you celebrate. We'll see you in 2023. Take care, everybody.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, Larry.
Take care, all.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.